This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Law Talk on Joy Drive.
Today we're diving into a really important conversation. That is, what happens when LGBTIQA+ parents separate, and how do you navigate co-parenting, donor agreements, and making sure your child is protected? And with me in the studio are two guests who are all too familiar with this discussion. Returning to Joy is Bec Dahl, partner at Nichols Family Lawyers and a leading advocate and ally for LGBTQIA+ inclusion in the legal profession. Bec, thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I'm also joined by Fiona Newton, founder of the Fitzroy Market, co-host with Bec on Joy's Chicks Talking Footy segment, and a separated LGBTQIA+ parent who has lived this experience herself. Fiona, welcome and thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me on Drive, Warren. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you both here. Now, let's start with you, Fiona. Can you share a bit about your journey into parenthood and how donor conception played a part in that?
Yes, I can. I was thinking about this question today. When you're in a relationship with two people that have wombs and you want to have a baby, one's got a low sperm count and the other one's got to carry them, and you have to decide who's going to carry the baby.
Mm-hmm.
We made the decision that would be me because I was a little bit older and we wanted the option to have another one, and Renee being younger, we thought she could go next, which didn't happen. And then the next question is, do you want to have a known donor, find someone that you know, mm-hmm, to donate their sperm to you, or do you want to find an unknown donor? And
that sounds like a difficult decision.
Yeah, there's a lot of decisions you have to make. And then even within those two questions, there's kind of underneath that, there's some more questions underneath both of those. But we decided to have an unknown donor. I watched some friends of mine in New South Wales.
Mm-hmm.
They had one of their best friends. They used his sperm to conceive both of their children, and they carried one each. And when the boys were 4 and 1, he took them to court for custody.
Oh.
And New South Wales at the time, so this is, 12, 13 years ago, they treated it like a biological separation, and the law hadn't really caught up with our scenarios where their arrangement was that the two women would be the parents, he would be involved in their lives but ultimately not be responsible for parenting, and then he sued them for custody when the boys were born. And we looked at that and felt like they spent 5 or 6 years in court battling this out. And we looked at that and thought the protection is much higher for an unknown donor. Yeah, so and Bec will clarify all the legal stuff, but in our research at the time, we were like, no, an unknown donor, they don't have any legal parental rights.
I mean, that's a scary risk, isn't it?
It's a massive risk. And look, some people do it really well and they have a great relationship and it's this rainbow over-parenting situation. we just felt like we just didn't want to take that risk at the time. And look, the law might have caught up a little bit now, but back then it just wasn't worth the risk. So we picked an unknown donor, and that meant that legally, and because we were going through IVF, that Renee and I were both the parents, and this donor person gave us a beautiful gift but was not, no, has no legal rights. We've still never met him. And that'll be up to Jackson if he wants to make contact.
Bec, listening to Fiona's story, can you give us a sense of how donor arrangements are usually treated under the law?
Yeah, look, it's interesting, and I guess, with something like fees, obviously they don't know who the donor is. I mean, the laws are that, as the child can have access to that information, and we don't have completely anonymous donations. So there's a little bit less there in terms of, engagement with that person. But for people who are doing known donor agreements, then lawyers will get involved then and help give people advice around what sort of agreements they want to have with those donors.
Fiona, when your relationship ended, what were the first things that went through your mind as a parent?
Well, obviously, I mean, it's not that different than when a heterosexual couple separates in that way because, you know, you're worried about the well-being of your child. Are you going to be emotionally traumatising them? Are they, you know, he was only four at the time, so going back and forth between two houses. I mean, one thing we did was we rented an extra apartment and we swapped instead of him for 6 months just to get him used to that arrangement. I did have a few people when we separated, people close to me saying, oh, thank God you carried the child, as if I was more safe and more protected in that scenario.
Does that make
than
a difference?
My ex-partner. And I was like, I think there's a lot of ignorance out there of Renee's legally as much the parent as I am. We could fight for custody just like anyone else.
Yeah, and I think that's often there seems to be, I think sometimes that can happen for rainbow families who do separate. I think that because, you know, usually one person isn't biologically related to the child, they automatically or they can worry about that. Whereas the way the law is in Australia, it says if a person has a baby, their partner is the legal other parent of that child, okay, irrespective of gender. So as Fiona said, yes, she had the baby, but Renee, as her partner, is the legal parent on the birth certificate as the legal parent.
Mm. Fiona, did the role of the donor ever cross your mind once you were separated? Was there any uncertainty there for you?
Not in our case. I think if we had picked someone we knew and had that person involved in their lives, that would have had an impact as well.
Mm.
And we would have had to think through that a lot more, and I think would have complicated it probably. I'm not saying telling people not to do that. You know, you've got to weigh up your own circumstances. It was just our situation. I was relieved that we didn't have to deal with any other parties. So it wasn't, and because we still don't know this person, and Jackson has never even asked about them yet, and he's 8 and a half, so it'll be up to him.
Beck, you mentioned we don't have strictly don't have completely anonymous donation here. So legally speaking, how clear is the line about a donor's role once a child is born? I mean, what does the law say about parentage in these situations?
Look, it's reasonably clear in the sense that, as I say, in a situation like Fiona's, there's two legal parents. The donor is not a legal parent. That doesn't change. But there can be situations where, and sort of along the lines Fee described with her friends, where the donor isn't a legal parent, but they've been perhaps very, very involved in this child's life. And, you know, there are situations where they may go to court the same way as a grandparent or an auntie and say, I've been very involved in this child's life, that's changed, or I want more. So even not as the legal parent, there are some times where a situation does come up like that.
Mm.
We're chatting with Beck Dahl's partner at Nichols Family Lawyers and Fiona Newton, who's sharing her very personal experience about what it's like to have separated with a child involved as well. Just on that, Fiona, let's talk about separation. It's one thing. Co-parenting brings a whole new set of challenges. What's been the biggest adjustment for you?
I think one of the, I mean, I don't think this is unique to same-sex parents, but it's always the welfare of the child, you know, ahead of, and I think this is something Renee and I've done really well, no matter how angry we are towards each other or whatever we've got going on. For a long time, we just kept the communication by email and never had any interaction while we were dropping him off, so that there was no, he was completely unaware if there was any conflict between us. You know, I miss him sometimes. I don't get to see him for a few days or even a week during school holidays or whatever. There's, you know, you don't have a child to ultimately not have them with you. So it's that it is heartbreaking sometimes.
And Beck, when parents are trying to figure out how to co-parent, how helpful are tools like parenting plans and consent orders in, I suppose, setting some structure?
I think it really depends on the separated couple and their dynamic. I think, you know, picking up on what Fee said, anything that can minimise conflict, particularly conflict with that the child is perhaps aware of or involved with, is amazing. So, look, some parents never formalise the agreement about their kids. I think you've been that way. You know, some people have just agreed on things and they go with it. Other people need a more formal approach, whether that is a court order or something else. So I think it's really dependent on the couple and what they need to support that healthy dynamic.
Fiona, if someone's listening and is going through something similar, what advice would you share from your own experience?
I think with separation, I would always advise to not come to any financial agreements or custody agreements without a third party. We didn't use lawyers, sorry, Beck. But we did have a...
She's upset.
I'm actually proud that we managed to avoid that. But
well, that's what often you say, isn't it, Beck?
Yeah,
if you correct. Can avoid
yeah,
being
involved. Absolutely.
Yeah, look, we were seeing a psychologist, so and she was quite qualified to, or a counsellor, and she was qualified to do the financial arrangements. And it just took the heat out of it to have an umpire, basically, that said... okay, let's umpire. Steer that. Yeah, let's steer that back to what's relevant. And instead of, you know, when you're starting to yell at each other because you're angry, and you've got that third person that just tones it down for you and keeps things rational.
Beck, from a legal perspective, what's the first step you usually recommend when someone comes to you in this situation?
Yeah, look, again, it depends on the situation. You know, there's some people who never see a lawyer, don't need legal advice. I think a lot of people, legal advice is helpful, because I think that particularly if you're feeling unsettled or concerned about what the future might look like legally, you know, as we always say, mediation is amazing. You know, you don't, if you can work things out between the two of you, that's the best option. I mean, I say it all the time to my clients, you know your kids. Judges in the family court don't know your kids. So an arrangement that parents can come up with together, the better. And if they need some help from some outside people, like Fee said, it might be a psychologist or legal advice, then use those as well.
Mm. Fiona, with hindsight, do you feel that the law has kept pace with the realities of modern rainbow families?
It's made progress. I think there's some areas, just going back to donor conception, one of the things, and I don't think this has changed yet, but you might be able to correct this, I'm not sure, Beck, but when we were going through IVF, I had to do two rounds of, it's the turkey basting, but it was at IVF.
And sure, there's a technical term.
Yeah, I don't know.
You didn't go to the what is the technical kitchen term for shop.
That? Yeah, get the Vegemite jar. but it was unnecessary, because we basically, to get Medicare rebates, you have to prove that you're infertile. And I'm like,
that has been fixed now.
Okay, it has been fixed. Yeah, well, at the time we couldn't make a baby, and we had to prove that we couldn't make a baby. So it was a bit discriminatory, I thought.
Beck?
Yeah, look, I think there's always room for change. I think that, you know, the law's one thing, but I think sometimes the interpretation of the law and the way perhaps the court looks at it too. I think that there has been a trend away from what you were saying, Fee, in terms of dealing like a separated couple when there actually is an intact family and a third person. I think there's more understanding of that. I think there's a lot of room for change in the surrogacy space, I think perhaps even more so than the donor space. I think the surrogacy laws are different in every state in Australia, and it creates a lot of confusion. And we've got some real gaps in the law around overseas surrogacy. So I think that that is a real area for reform. But look, we can always get better.
Yeah. I mean, it's a different story if you had gay men in the studio today.
I think. Very different. Yeah.
Fiona, how is your son going?
He's 8 and a half, turning 16. No, he's a gorgeous boy, and he was wearing a hat yesterday that said, "I heart hot mums."
Oh.
So we're inflicting our rainbow agenda on
him. That's right. I've read about that.
Now, thank you so much for chatting about that. But before we say goodbye, there's something important happening this weekend. I'm glad that there's been no punch-ups in the studio over this matter. Talk to us.
Well, that's right. Well, you know, Fee and I are long-time co-hosts of Chicks Talking
you
Footy.
You are.
Yeah,
but
hours of radio together, haven't
yes,
we?
But this Friday night, our teams, my Crows and Fee's Hawks, are playing each other in a cutthroat final.
Right.
So yeah, we've both got our scarves on here, okay, and it's pretty tense.
Right? And how at risk is the friendship?
Well, look, we'll talk about friendship separation in Drive next week.
Yeah, that's right. We'll be back on that one.
That's next week's
topic. We will need a psychologist then. Yeah.
Beck and Fee, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your perspective. It's been really powerful to hear the mix of lived experience and legal insight on what can be a really emotional and complex journey. Thank you both.
Thanks, Warren.
Thanks, Warren.
And I hope we see you next week, hugging. Beck Dahl is partner at Nichols Family Lawyers, and Fiona Newton is the founder of the Fitzroy Market. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.